Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Menards is your one-stop shop for all your summer essentials. Whether you're stocking up on everyone's favorite snacks, making a patio perfect for entertaining family and friends, or getting ready to gather around the grill, Menards has everything you need for your get-togethers all summer long. Save big money now at Menards. Plus, don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, everybody, it's Tim Miller and JVO The Bulwark. As promised, we are going to do a little bit of a quasi-read-along with you of J.D. Vance's new book, Communion. I thought about going down to my local bookstore, shout out Garden District Books or Octavia Books or all the other great bookstores here in New Orleans. But I was like, I just couldn't stomach it. I couldn't stomach actually letting my door be darkened.
Not one dime.
By this. And so Ansley and Jasmine on our team, you know Jasmine from the Friday Mailbag, have done the duties for us, have read the book, put together some excerpts, and JVL and I are just going to read some choice excerpts together and react to them and see if either of us managed to have a stroke or a heart event of any kind.
For me, Tim, not reading this book is self-care, because I got to say, just going through the 10,000 words of excerpt that we made our way through nearly put me in the grave. This fucking guy.
I'm going to try to get you 7 feet under here. Six, not enough. We're going to go an additional foot down.
This one goes to seven.
We'll start in the introduction. One thing I noticed from the excerpts is that there's some Catholic talk, and we're going to get to the Catholic excerpts. But for a book that is ostensibly about the conversion to the Catholic Church, it seems like that journey got a little bit of short shrift as compared to, self-congratulation, J.D. Vance's personal advancement through the world, quite a bit of political interest.
It's about conversions for sure. Not a ton of Catholic conversion stuff, but in a way, I think that's good, because I get the sense that we're just a few years away from another J.D. Vance conversion back to evangelical Christianity.
And that takes us to the introduction, because I thought this was noteworthy. There were two elements from that that I want to go over on kind of how he lays the groundwork. It's the introduction, how you lay the groundwork for your journey to Jesus. Here's how he met Jesus. I saw my grandmothers taking care of their grandkids with divinely inspired patience. I saw normal people who, unconcerned with whether they'd ever be rich or powerful, were more content and less restless than friends in my Ivy League circles. I looked at my son's big brown eyes and realized he didn't need me to be rich or powerful. He just needed me to be a good dad.
Yeah.
So that's interesting on the meeting of Jesus there. It is kind of tied to basically most of his villain origin story, which is that the classmates that I met at Yale were annoying as fuck. And that is really what kind of everything comes down to. It's like, I like Donald Trump because of that. I want to become a Christian because of that. I want to be everything that the person that was in my dorm at Yale was not, because I found them annoying.
There's a lot of that. And to be honest, I've always wondered this about JD, if even that is genuine, because you remember there was some Yale law friend of his who was, a trans lesbian or something. I don't remember exactly, but a close friend who we always dined out on stories about. It seems equally possible to me that JD liked all these people just fine while he was there. and has only now retroactively decided that he's got to cast them as the villains for why he decided to do what he did. My favorite part about this, though, is, you know, he realizes that his son didn't need him to be rich or powerful. That's interesting. It's true. But also, JD has spent his entire adult life trying to become rich and powerful. Yeah. So not clear that this is a lesson he internalized.
There was never even a moment, actually, where he took a break from that or stopped. I mean, he was either on the VC path, book.
Single upward trajectory.
Movie. I mean, he touched all of the main centers of riches and power in the country.
Law.
Like, he went into investing.
Clerkship. Venture capital and investment, Hollywood,
politics,
like the Senate, and then the vice presidency.
He checked all the boxes before he even turned 40. And a lot of people just only go for one, even like really ambitious people. He's tried to do all of them. So anyway, okay. Here is to your point about the evangelism and maybe a path back to evangelicism was another part of the introduction. By the same token, I've never felt more welcomed in my life than I did when I walked into a Southern Baptist or Pentecostal church as a kid. I have encouraged priests I know to go to an evangelical service to see what I mean. Besides the amazing music, I promise you'll find people who invite you to coffee or to their house for a meal. I encourage you to come back. That's interesting that in a book about conversion from Protestantism to Catholicism, in the introduction of the book, he wants to make it very important that you know that he thinks evangelicals are actually better than Catholics in a lot of ways, and that Catholic priests could learn from them.
It's such a weird thing that you and I, as cradle Catholics, look at this, and I have always viewed Catholicism to me is barely even Christian. Like, when we had that big fight the other day about, not our fight, but Pete Hegseth with the Christian denominations, there was like Christian Catholic. And I was like, why is Catholic listed under Christian?
Yeah, Christian-Catholic, what is that? Yeah, right, what is that? It's like the Mormons were mad that they got moved out of the Christians, but had the Catholics gotten moved out, everybody was like, well, obviously.
Obviously. Yeah. And part of that is things like the music. I am sorry. All love to my great friends who are evangelicals or just Protestant in general with their music. But you go to Catholic church and like what you're signing up for, not all Catholic churches, but you're signing up for like Palestrina and sacred music that's thousands of years old that is really, really good. And listening to, do you remember the movie Saved?
I do not.
Fantastic thing about like the youth pastors and stuff. Like listening to like Christian church rock. Sorry, that's horrible. Not amazing music. It's horrible.
Air poison.
It's an abomination. About the friendly stuff, again, this is definitely a point of differentiation between Protestant sects and the Catholics. The Catholics, we don't even really like to look at each other during Mass. Like when you got to do the sign of peace, there's one point during the Mass where you got to do the sign and you got to turn to your neighbor and say, oh, peace be with you, and shake hands, peace be with you. We don't even like that.
No, part of the reason why Catholics have such big families, I think, is for during the sign of peace, they can spend most of that period giving peace to their own family members. Right?
That's what I do.
Yeah, right. That's why you have so many children. If you only have the one child, then you got to spend most of the period where you're doing peace, like touching the clammy hands of strangers, and that's not appealing. So yeah, I know. It's just the whole thing is like, okay, well, you were in those. Like, you ostensibly could have just been a Baptist. You didn't have to convert. So
it is weird to be like, you know, to convert and then to go to priests and like you've been a Catholic for 5 minutes. You're like, hey, excuse me, Father. I get some thoughts about how we could change things up around here. So do you think we could maybe ixnay some of the Latin, if you know what I'm saying? And just like it is like the guy who's like been at the job for 5 minutes and is telling his boss how to do their job.
Well, we all know that guy. All right. Chapter one is titled What's the Matter with J.D. Vance? We're going to skip through that, but that's just funny. That's the title. It's a deep question. It doesn't seem like J.D. Vance has done a lot of reflection on that, but maybe at some point he will. I want to move ahead to chapter three because Ross Douthat gets mentioned.
Yes.
So we'll just go there. This chapter three is titled They Probably Don't Serve Beer in Hell, but They Do in Columbus. A lot of this chapter is basically, to my understanding, kind of like a reflection on the values of regular folks versus the values of the elites, as we've been highlighting. Did not, at least pretends to not like his Yale classmates, and that is what is undergirding his faith and his political identity. Here it is, and here's he leans on Ross Douthat's wisdom to make this point. In the New York Times, Ross Douthat wrote a brilliant column titled "Why We Miss the WASPs." It's pretty funny. Now, after complimenting the evangelicals for how friendly they are, we've got to touch the WASPs as well. We got to give them a shout out, all part of our Catholic conversion book. All right. In the New York Times, Ross Douthat wrote a brilliant column titled "Why We Miss the WASPs," in which he argued not long after George H.W. Bush died that Bush represented something the country needed to recover. Bush, the scion of a wealthy and powerful family, was driven by an overwhelming sense of duty. Douthat argued that our modern class of meritocrats lacked. So I'm not sure exactly how that supports the Catholic conversion or his life story or his life journey as a meritocrat, but JV, I'll just wonder if you had any reflections.
Yeah, I do. So I mean, it is true that this is a thing that used to be a big part of WASP culture, especially at the elite levels, right? It's why the Kennedys went to war and stuff like that. Pappy Bush was, I mean, this guy did everything, right? Yeah. You know, first baseman, captain of the Yale baseball team, bomber pilot in the war, head of CIA, elected representative, vice president, president.
Hand wrote thank you notes to everybody.
Yeah. And, I think we do have a lot of that still in America. The person who exemplifies that best, I think, is probably Robert Mueller, who was a guy born in well-to-do and child of privilege and signed up to go to Vietnam and then became a criminal career prosecutor and worked in public service for most of his life. And I don't think JD has a lot to say about him. Instead, JD throws in with people who've never served anything. What has Don Jr. ever done to serve? What did Donald Trump ever do to serve? Like, this is, and in fact, again, a lot of JD's Yale classmates went on to do things like work in public law, and he views them as like busybodies.
Right.
So it's just this upside down, like everything is post facto rationalization for JD.
Moving on to chapter 4, more money, more problems. Again, all of the life lessons that he is offering in the book seem to be in direct counter to his own personal life choices. But here he's once again complaining about his classmates at Yale. And I enjoyed this little nugget in particular. He was referencing that women are less likely, there was concern that women are less likely to participate in classroom discussions. Classroom discussions are dominated by men. But he also was tired of what he called the arrogant classmates who droned on a lot about material dialectics. Arrogant people that drone on a lot annoy JD. That's interesting.
Can't think of somebody like that.
That's interesting. Anyway, he doesn't like that. And so he was upset with the speak up movement, which is encouraging women to speak up. And he writes this: I didn't understand how the solution to that problem was to have women talk a lot more. Why shouldn't the men just talk a lot less? Rather than a speak up movement directed at the women of Yale Law School, why not a shut the hell up movement directed at everyone? Sign me up.
You know what? This is the Onion headline. The worst person you know just made a good point. Yes.
I mean, I guess, but it's him. You shut the hell up, JD. You shut the hell up.
It'd fair. Like stop writing books. A book.
Yeah. Like me writing a book about a movement, which is like people should stop talking so much about gay stuff and cursing on their podcasts. It's really annoying. I'm like, it's like, well, okay, well, why would I don't think I would be the best messenger for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll move forward. We finally in chapter 5 really start to get the kind of his conversion story. And boy, before we get to the person that really most impacted his conversion, you might assume it would be a religious leader of some kind, somebody that's very pious, a Catholic writer, Mother Teresa, a saint. It's not. We'll get to that person in a second, who it is. But there was kind of a door cracking that did come from reading about a saint. And he describes Saint Augustine of Hippo's Meditations as creating the first crack in his atheist armor. He writes this: above all else, it gave me a certain humility. Debates about science and technology and faith and how to harmonize them hadn't first been presented to an arrogant young Christian in Milltown, Ohio. Rather, they're as old as the church itself. I began to see the world of the Christian faith as richer and more interesting than I'd realized.
Local man discovers that water is wet. I don't know. I mean, like, it does make you wonder, how the fuck did he get into Yale Law? Like, J.D. Vance learns that fides et ratio is a thing. Huh? What a fucking provincial little burger. I don't even know what to say.
All right. Now let's take us to the man that really set J.D. Vance on a course towards faithfulness. It's a homosexual who has achieved more money than God, more money than anyone in human history. Somebody who has a harem of side boyfriends. It's Peter Thiel. Thiel impacted me in another way, J.D. writes. Possibly the smartest person I'd ever met, he identified very openly as a Christian. Notice he doesn't say Catholic. There we go. He defied the simple social template I had constructed, that dumb people were religious and smart people were atheists. I have another sentence I want to get to, but can we just stop there for a second?
Yeah, because we got to get to that next sentence too.
We're going to. J.D. Vance describes himself. He takes the worst possible caricature that you could imagine of a snooty atheist liberal on Harvard's campus. Like, and he constructs this straw man of this horrible person that doesn't believe that there are any smart religious people and that all of the smart people are atheists like them. And everyone that's religious is a fucking moron. Like, he constructs this straw man and he's like, that was me, actually. That was me. I was the worst imaginary progressive that you have met. Like, it did not even occur to me that there could be a person that believed in any religion and that was also smart. I don't know. How is that possible? How did he go through life for 3 decades and not meet anybody who was religious that he also found smart? Did he not read? Like, did he not fucking read? How did he get into
Never
Yale
picked
Law?
Up
did
Witness
he,
to Hope?
Yeah, did you not read a single book from any religious person through history? I'm not even talking about religious books. I'm just talking about great works of fiction. I do not read any columnists, like many of the prominent conservative columnists, the people that he would come to admire.
Bill Bennett, pretty smart guy.
They were all religious. You thought they were all fucking morons? You thought they were all Forrest Gump and that you were the only smart one? I mean, he just describes himself as the biggest piece of shit ever. And there's something, I guess, clarifying about that and insightful. And I don't believe it's true even, but like the fact that he created a fantasy version of himself that was that bad to create a straw man to attack liberals, I think is a pretty interesting debate nerd move.
It is. The thing that jumped out at me about this passage was that there are a couple times in the book where it's very clear that JD is writing to insulate himself in case somebody tries on the inside of the Trump administration to clip something, give it to Trump and say, look, JD's taking a shot at you. And yeah. So possibly the smartest person I'd ever met. Why is the word possibly in there? Because he's got to make sure he leaves wiggle room so he can tell Mr. Trump, sir, you're the smartest person I ever met.
But Peter Thiel impacted me in another way. Possibly the smartest person I've ever met. It's just like the idea that Thiel also is a Christian in any meaningful way, or a Catholic, or that Thiel would help you on your journey towards Catholicism. I mean, like, Thiel is like what did Tucker call Trump? A demonic force?
Demonic force. Can I say a word about Peter Thiel before we get? Because we do got to get to the Rene Girard stuff.
We're going to.
I do not like to probe at the faith of others with my hands. The thing about Peter Thiel is that, like, if you had to boil down what is the central tenet of Catholicism or Christianity, it is that God so loved the world that he gave his only son to save us so that we don't have to fear death anymore. As far as I can tell, Peter Thiel's entire worldview is based around the utter terror of death. Like, this, all he wants to do is avoid death. He thinks death is horrible. Death is evil. Now, again,
That's why all struggle. His skin is melting and he looks like his exoskeleton and endoskeleton are inverted. And that's why he's drinking and injecting twink blood into his body, because he wants to try to defeat death.
We all struggle with aspects of our faith. Maybe that's just his struggle, is fear of death. But again, it is a little weird to say at once, I'm a believing Christian, and also, please God, don't ever let me die. These things are in tension.
I think that there's a lot in tension between Peter Thiel's choices. And there's just not a you know, ton of evidence that, you know, he, you know, cares about the neighbor. That he judges others like he himself would like to be judged. We could go down the list of the Beatitudes and do a check and list and see how Peter Thiel's doing, but I think that's probably not that helpful. Okay. So Peter Thiel's taking J.D. Vance into the Catholic faith. And J.D., where does he lead him, you might wonder? Thiel led me to René Girard, the French philosopher under whom he had studied at Stanford. Now, I don't know a ton about René Girard, JVL, but it seems like you might.
So I saw this and I thought, wait a minute. I know something about René Girard. Why do I know about René Girard? And I know about René Girard because my second favorite podcast is Behind the Bastards. And Robert Evans did a long, long exegesis on René Girard after Peter Thiel's Antichrist lectures. And René Girard was a French philosopher who talked a lot about man as a mimetic creature. And he was very keyed in on how authoritarians always scapegoat people, right? That part of the rise to authoritarianism is scapegoating. And looked a lot at Nazi Germany, a lot about how the minorities are always there to be hurt. And when you again, I'm going to go back to the Robert Evans thing on this. The case Robert makes is that Peter Thiel listened to René Girard and loved him because he thought that René Girard was giving him a manual. René Girard is presenting this as a warning and a philosophical exegesis on, you know, what not to do. And this is like the old tech joke. Like, you know, we read a book, Why Not to Build the Torture Nexus? And we decided, hey, we should build the torture nexus. That's what this is. And if the fact that JD zeroes in on this, and the guy who would go on to say, sure, I'll make things up about Haitians killing your dogs and eating them. And it's because they're like, he looked at René Girard and saw that scapegoating is a very powerful thing to do when trying to take control of society. And he thought, huh, there's something to that.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Treat Dad this Father's Day with great gifts from Menards. From levels, nailers, and drills to complete any project, to tool chests, recliners, and grills, we've got the perfect gifts to make this Father's Day one to remember. Stop by your local Menards today and save big money on gifts for Dad. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Couple pages later, it was in law school that I first became aware that I was susceptible to intense pressure to believe certain things.
You don't say.
Are you aware of that now, JD? Do you feel like you're under intense pressure to believe certain things now? Blink twice if you're looking for help in the vice president's residence. Fucking douche.
Is this a good deal we're getting with the Iranians, JD?
Do you really believe the 2020 election was stolen?
Was it good that America went to war with Iran, JD? Tell us what you really think.
Did you do ivermectin? All right, moving on to chapter 6. I don't know. Maybe we should just skip over this part. There's a long section about how JD is a Vulcan. He self-assesses that he doesn't have a lot of emotion. And I thought that was, at times, you got to, I guess, hand it to him that he does identify some of his flaws. He doesn't usually act on any of them. and try to improve himself.
That's because he later then talks about how he didn't find therapy useful.
Yeah, we'll get. Yeah, that's what I'm going to next. Yeah.
He explains why he should be in therapy and then says, "Nah, I went to a therapy thing. I didn't like it."
You know, it's like, hey, I was in a relationship with a girl and I was like, I guess I don't really give a fuck if she dumps me. And I really don't care about her feelings at all. And I don't have any empathy. And it might be tied to the fact that my dad didn't love me. That's page 103. Then page 107, I attended a few therapy sessions at the Yale Student Health Clinic. The therapist I spoke to was a good guy, but I found therapy too uncomfortable. But there was a deeper problem with therapy. It was divorced from any sense of responsibility or guilt.
I don't think that's how therapy works. Certainly not the responsibility aspect of it. A lot of responsibility talk in therapy, as far as I understand. The guilt, more of a Catholic-specific thing than a therapy thing.
We're getting into that. But I also, as a, again, cradle Catholic, very intimately familiar with Catholic guilt and the ways it can be valuable and at times less valuable to personal guilt. I'm aware. I've lived it. But, like, you do cover that territory in therapy. You do. Like, one of my big things that helped me when I was in therapy was identifying the difference between guilt and shame internally and kind of like separating those things and thinking about how you need to treat them differently. And, you know, shame being kind of a sense that you are bad and guilt being a sense that you did bad things and how if you do bad things, you can ease your guilt by, you know, doing things within your integrity.
Doing good things.
We covered this in my therapist. I'm sorry that you didn't like the one therapist. You went to one therapy lesson at Yale and you're like, this dude's an idiot. This dude's a fucking idiot. I'm good.
Oh, you found it uncomfortable. It's supposed to be uncomfortable. If therapy right. is comfortable, you're probably not getting a lot of work done. Just a thought.
We move forward. It looks like JVL, you want to cover this, page 112. He talks about hollow goals here. My career was on a rocket ship. I had a prestigious federal clerkship and an offer at a major international law firm. I had an elite law school diploma. I had the promise of financial riches I had only dreamed of as a kid. Prestige, elite riches. These were the hollow goals of a person who measured his life by how other people viewed him.
So he gave it up and founded a food pantry to help his community, right?
No, I think he wrote a memoir. I think he wrote a memoir about how great he was and how he overcame.
It's an astonishing thing to have a guy who has raced up the ladder and is still running up the ladder using the existence of the ladder as a way to say that everybody else is bad.
I mean, it's just like, what, you wrote a memoir at like age 35. About your personal triumph to plaudits, and then you sold it to Hollywood and made a biopic about yourself. And like, you're telling us that you recognized during this process that you were spending too much time measuring your life by how other people viewed you. Your whole life is in
it was all performance. That's the weird thing. Also, it's not like, oh, other people were looking and judging me. This kid was like out strutting on the catwalk telling everybody, look at me. Look at me!
And then at the end of that, he's like, you know what I want to do? I want to get into the one business where the entire goal of the business is to get other people to view me well. Politics.
It's almost like he doesn't mean it, Tim.
Now we get to his adult conversion to Catholicism and familiarity with Catholic guilt. He starts page 125. For an evangelical, the weirdest Catholic sacrament may be the rite of confession and reconciliation. For people who don't know that, JVL, do you want to give people a description of what the rite of reconciliation is?
So this is the sacrament of reconciliation is the thing, if you know anything about Catholic Church from the movies, it's that. So a Catholic goes into a box. There's a priest on the other side of the box through a screen. You can't see each other. You say, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 3 months since my last confession. And he says, you know, my son. He mutters some Latin. Then he says, tell me, my son. And so you tell him this. And he said, well, you know, I took the Lord's name in vain this many times. And I jerked off this many times. And blah, 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 blah. And then he, you know.
Talking to priests about your masturbation as a child in retrospect was maybe kind of a misguided. Maybe some unintended consequences from that.
Have you seen Wake Up Dead Man?
No.
You have to see Wake Up Dead Man.
Okay.
So it's the last Knives Out movie. It's the best Catholic movie ever made. And there is a scene in which these two priests, one of whom is a very bad guy, one priest played by Josh Brolin is giving his confession to the other priest. And he's just like, and then I whacked off in the shower. And after I was just going to town on it.
Wait, I'm sorry. I did see this. Very good.
The point is you are contrite, right? As the person seeking this, you don't do it until you've examined your conscience and you see what you did wrong. You talk to the priest and the priest sometimes will give you some advice. Sometimes we'll give you some counsel. Sometimes we'll just say, by the power of best, absolve you of your sins, do 10 Hail Marys and 5 Our Fathers. Go forth and sin no more. That's confession.
So JD describes it thusly. It's like therapy, but with less whining and more guilt. I don't like. Ken, this seems to be more about you than either the act of confession or therapy.
Again, you get to choose how much whining you do in a confessional, right?
But he moves on. But I found liberation in guilt. The recognition that I had screwed up, that I must ask forgiveness of God and of the people I'd wronged, forced me to think about my own conduct in a profoundly different way. Fuck you. I mean, fuck you. This is just so fucking ridiculous. Like, the idea that J.D. Vance is the type of person that really has come to appreciate the value of acknowledging when you've screwed up and need to ask your fellow man for your forgiveness. I mean, he did a whole bit about how he's going to make up stories,
false witness, as a for instance.
Like, he said that he does that on purpose. And he doesn't care who it hurts. He doesn't care about the Haitian kids that got mocked as dog eaters in their school or that got wrongly deported. Or he doesn't care about fucking Renee Good, who got shot by police. And he doesn't care. He doesn't. The one that pissed me off so much. People, really, if your blood pressure's not up on this one, enough on this one, people, go back and watch my reaction video to JD and Ross's interview at the Vatican, where Ross is asking him about the deportations to Sikkot. And JD's like, well, I haven't seen any evidence that any of these people are wrong. People can bring me evidence if they want. And it's like, everyone is bringing you evidence. You guys wrongly sent people to a torture prison. It was your fault. You did it. No, there's been no recognition, no acknowledgement, no asking of forgiveness. I don't know what's happening between him and his priest in the little box, but I don't believe that's how it works, JVL. Is that how it works? Where you go into the box and you ask for forgiveness and you come out and you keep doing the thing that you asked for forgiveness on and then you feel better? Is that how it works?
That is how it works for some people. I do think that's funny, though. This is in stark contrast to Trump. So Trump's whole view of Christianity, you remember this going back to like 2016 when it was a big like, oh, Christians don't ever get behind him because he says he's never done anything wrong. He's never sinned. He's never had to ask for forgiveness. Right. This is like a recurring thing with him. No, I've never done anything wrong. No, I've never had to. If I did anything wrong, maybe it was I hired some people I shouldn't have because they were losers and bums and I had to fire them. And JD kind of since he made the turn to Trump, there's been a lot of like, I'm never wrong. I'm never wrong. I'm never wrong. Except for all those times in the past when I was wrong. And of course, but that doesn't count anymore. But now he's like, you know, of course, in private, I talked about all the bad things I do. Okay, bro. Very strange.
The fact that there was a sacramental ritual around guilt of publicly confessing something, admitting you did wrong, and performing an act of penance attracted me to Catholicism. And I guess in one sense, this might be the skeleton key that connects his conversion to Catholicism with his conversion to Trumpism, where he looked at Catholicism and he said, you know, this is this cool ritual where I get to do this and I feel cleansed and I get to have a rebirth. If I confess that I did something wrong and I admit that I did it and then I perform an act of penance and then I come around the other side, except like the thing that J.D. Vance is asking for forgiveness for is not any of the things he sinned. It's not any of the sins that he wants penance for. It is the fact that he once did not trust Donald Trump. Maybe. And so now he's going through kind of a continual public confession where he gets his penance through Donald Trump's praise. It's the best I can do. Because the idea that he likes to admit he did wrong is not something that is in my experience with J.D. Vance, except for the one thing that he admits he did wrong a lot of times, which was not trust Donald Trump.
Literally, just go back to the Haitian thing, right? He's caught on the Haitian thing. He's on CNN, and I forget who the host was. Like, but you said this thing and it was wrong. You made it up. He's like, you're damn right I did, and I'll do it again. What? I don't know. I don't know how to square that with any of this, Tim.
I fucking hate him. There's one thing. If we're going to give JD credit, there's one thing that he does ask for forgiveness for in the book.
Ah.
For all of his sins, for all of his empty promises, he does acknowledge that he erred one time in the campaign. It goes like this. One of the dumbest things I ever said came when I argued that childless cat ladies across the Democratic Party were running our country into the ground. It was a boneheaded comment, intentionally and successfully provocative rather than illuminating. I could have made that point much more effectively and with the benefit of showing a little charity to the many Americans who don't have children. When I consider the church's admonition to respect the dignity of every life, this was a clear moment where I failed. What do you make of that?
One is supposed to strive for charity at all times, not just a little charity sometimes, but that's good on you, Mr. Vice President.
I got a little problem with it. I mean, it's
okay.
It seems to me like he has decided that he's done some polling and he's looked at the opposition research, like he tested it. And he's like, what is the thing that I've done that people like the least, that stuck with people the most? It's like, man, it seems like people really were mad at me about this childless cat lady thing. So that's going to be the one thing I ask forgiveness for. And I don't really think it's in the spirit of, the sacrament of confession to like pick the one convenient thing that you want to apologize for because you think that will make the priest look at you a little better. It seems to be me to be what he's doing here. And one, I think, data point I would offer that it does not seem to me that he is giving the benefit of charity to childless cat ladies, or that he is not respecting the dignity of every life, is his treatment of Renee Good, as mentioned earlier. Because Renee Good is basically an example of the person that he was mocking, right? And it's a liberal activist woman. She has a kid. She has a kid. But I just mean, like, the stereotype he was trying to create when he called them childless cat ladies, it was like the type of person that was showing up to these protests and, had the Subaru or whatever car she had. And after she was murdered by the state, he said this: everyone who's been repeating the lie that this is some innocent woman who was out for a drive in Minneapolis when a law enforcement officer shot her, you should be ashamed of yourself. He said he felt very, very sad for Good. She was brainwashed. She was a victim of left-wing ideology. Her death is a tragedy of her own making, and a tragedy of the far left who has marshaled in an entire movement, a lunatic fringe against our law enforcement officers. We've learned subsequently from the New York Times that he wanted to call in the Insurrection Act so that more protesters could be murdered. I don't know. I don't think that he's actually reflected and that he actually respects the dignity of every life. And Same. That he actually wants to show charity to liberal women. I think that he just thought that there was one time when he was attacking liberal women where he said something that was a little too on far.
The nice thing about this is, if he was going to apologize for something, if you apologize for the childless cat ladies, there's no actual human being you have to apologize to.
And there's no actual action you have to take either.
Right. So if he was wrong, if he was going to say, boy, I just, I got caught up in the moment. I didn't quite know what was going on. I was trying to defend the president. I should never have said that about Renee Good. Well, now you actually have to say something to Renee Good's family, right? There's an actual, right? And JD just wants to be able to check a box. Like, he wants to be able to say, well, look, what more do you want from me? Jeez, these mouthy broads.
He does discuss his daddy issues at one point. I don't know if there's anything worth discussing there, but it's noteworthy that he identifies that he still resents the men that his mother brought into his life. I don't know if there's any parallels you could draw there. No?
Okay. Oh, who can say?
Here we go. Here's another one. A recovering addict once told me in jail he met a preacher whose simple bit of wisdom changed his life. Show me your friends, and I'll show you your future. And he goes on, I dismissed that quote, but it took on a new power as I raised my son. The people we spend our time with, the cultural pond in which we swim, would exert remarkable power over our life.
And so I decided to hold hands with Benny Johnson and Donald Trump Jr. and Cash Patel. And I thought Laura Loomer, these are the people who I wanted surrounding me as I raised my child. Not Robert Mueller. No, not Joe Biden. Not
Bill Kristol, who he attacks in the book.
Bill Kristol, not David Frum. Not John Cornyn or all these people he's like gone to war against.
Not the people at my church in Cincinnati.
Because the craziest fucking people Cincinnati. In American politics. Those are the people he's with. Okay.
Yeah. Peter Thiel. I just like what? It's almost like, is this a troll? Does he not think? Has he? I guess the mind is powerful, and there's like this powerful
Elon Musk
rationalization that you can do. Where you're just like, I mean, he's saying it. You would think that like JD could leave his body and read the book and look at this and like have a moment of clarity where he's like, who what people am I surrounding myself with?
Rod Dreher.
These people are horrible. They're liars. They're corrupt. They don't care about human life. Stephen Miller. Like, this is my posse now.
It's such a weird thing to identify the thing that it's like the rest of it. It's bizarre.
This relates to this. We move on to chapter 8. There's a little more Catholicism. I want to hit a couple more things before we go. And this was a comment on Pope Leo. He's talking about his theory of human nature.
Leo 13, not the current Leo, not the bulwark Pope.
It felt more right than any theory of human nature I'd ever read. I wasn't very good at praying, and I lacked an emotional connection to the faith, but these arguments engaged me. I just have a tough time mashing that with his actions. It's like Pope Leo's theory of human nature, you know, is you know, talking about commitment to duty, commitment to family, commitment to community. And he like has warped that in this weird way that like means closed borders. And
also this is like the joke about converts versus cradle Catholics, right? Because the cradle Catholic could be like, yeah, bro, just, you read the Summa, right? Like this is all in the Summa. And JD's like, I discovered Pope Leo the 13th, and then in his encyclical just
like, we need to read the tweet. We're putting it up on screen. Shout out to A. Graby. Every lifelong Catholic I've ever met is like, I think we're supposed to give food to the poor people. And every adult convert is like, the Archon of Constantinople's epistle on the Pentecostine rites of the Eucharist clearly states women shouldn't have rights. It's like, what? It's like, yeah. It's like Pope Leo the 13th theory of human nature is the thing that supports our alligator Alcatraz. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
He also discusses the rite of Christian initiation, RCIA.
Yeah.
You know, which is what converts have to go to, Catholic converts. We've all been to some Catholic convert classes if you're Catholic. I thought it was interesting that he did it through personal study.
It's fine. A lot of people do it that way. Nothing wrong with that.
It's noteworthy, though. I thought I was coming to the Catholic Church for the communion and for the, you know, the community and how, like, I want to surround myself with regular people. Like, what better opportunity to surround yourself with normal people also going through the Catholic conversion process to meet others that might want to invite you to their home in the future, to build relationships. Like, what better chance to do that than through RCIA? Like, J.D. Vance was like, no, I think I'll just sit in my house and read Pope Leo's epistles.
Can I let you in on a little secret of Catholic Washington?
Sure.
There are a lot of adult professional conservative converts to Catholicism over the last 20 years, due in large part to our friends at the Pauline Book Center right on K Street. I think it's K Street. And
never been.
There's a lot of one-on-one stuff with the, it's like going to the baccarat room at the high rollers table when you're in a casino, like, you know, oh, sir, you don't need to be an RCIA with the hoi polloi. Okay, we will do a personalized concierge. What I thought was weird about this was, so JD writes, the process is pretty informal. No, it's not. The process of joining an evangelical church is informal. You just fucking show up. You put on flip-flops and shorts and you show up. Hey, great. You remember the church. To convert to Catholicism, it's like a thing. You gotta fill out. There's paperwork. There are classes that you gotta. Your name goes in a book that goes in the diocese. There are records. You then show up at a mass. The bishop has to be there. They mark you with the oil of the chrism. I mean, it is like the farthest thing from informal. It's insanely formal.
Yeah,
and it just made me wonder, like, what Catholic Church is this dude talking about?
He didn't do it. That's what I'm saying. He didn't do it. This is all fake. Like, it's all fake. He didn't do it. He had some, you know, he did the personal study and they fast tracked him. We're this far in. Anybody's this far in. Somebody's going to clip this, whatever, in the future, and it's going to hurt my career, but I don't care. It's weird that his wife is still Hindu. It's weird. I'm sorry. It's fine. I understand there are mixed faith marriages, and I respect that. I have a lot of friends who are in mixed faith marriages. You know, there are a lot of times where people convert for their spouse. I have many of those in my family. It's like J.D. Vance is like, I am going to go through a private conversion to Catholicism.
And be super tratty.
And be super trad. And I'm going to write a book about it. And I'm going to
He's so trad that he's basically an integralist.
Yeah. And
it's weird. Yet,
my wife is not going to come on the journey with me. And in the book where I write about my traditionalist conversion to Catholicism, I'm also going to write about the traditional family structure. We kind of skipped over some of that, but there's a lot about how the man should be the earner and wife supports the man. Like in this case, she didn't come along with it. And it's just, I don't know. It feels like if it was really, really an earnest passion project for him and not a political document, like if it was something where like deep down in his private life, not performing, because he writes in the book about how he doesn't care about what other people think about him. If it wasn't a performance thing and it was deeply personal, like it would probably be like something that's so personal that he would want to bring his family along on the journey with him, or at least they would talk.
What's weird about it is the kind of Catholic he is, right? Like if he was a lib Catholic, if he was one of those America magazine reading libtard Catholics, then I'd be like, sure, I bet his wife is Jewish or Hindu or whatever, right? The weirdness is, again, he's like pretty far out in the Patrick Deneen integralist side of this, which believes so strongly in all of this that they think America should be a theocracy.
And then she's going to go to hell.
Right.
I mean, they think she's going to go to hell.
That's what's strange to me. If he was a normie Catholic, then I would be like, yeah, so his wife is a different faith. Who cares?
It's interesting to bring up hell, actually. Another segment of the book, he talks about how he's not scared of hell. Which, like, makes sense. Fingers crossed.
In many ways, he lives in it right now.
Yeah, fingers crossed. This is all just for show. Because if it was real, the real deal, you know where I'd be going.
Is the bad place.
But it's like, okay, well, maybe that explains why it doesn't concern him at all that his wife's going to go to hell. Maybe he thinks she's going to come around later. I don't know. The whole thing is just doesn't pass the sniff test for me. Is there anything else we wanted to make sure we wanted to hit?
Page 1883, talking about his decision to run for the Senate. This is another one of those times where he is writing for an audience of one. Here's the formulation he uses. In early 2021, not long after Joe Biden was sworn in as president. Not after Joe Biden won the election. Not after Joe Biden became president. Was sworn in as president. Again, he's just got to make sure that nobody can clip this and show it to the dear leader that there's an example of JD doing deviationist thinking.
I like how he writes about in that chapter how the key factor in his Senate race, like the differentiator from the other Republicans, was that he focused less on abstractions like GDP and more on the dignity of the workers than his opponents did.
Dignity.
You know, yeah, because like Josh Mandel was really focused on kind of like, you know.
He's
like
a policy wonk. I mean, that guy was just, you know, all he talked about was his white papers.
Hayek, white papers, economics. Not a lot of discussion about how Donald Trump endorsed him and carried him across the line, and his friendship with Donald Trump Jr., which is probably fake, is the reason why he's in the Senate anyway.
Talking about the post-World War II order, he has a long thing about that, where he basically is like, all these boomers thinking that everything they did after World War II was good, fuck them. That sucked. And it's just ahistorical nonsense. But then he gets down to a point we talked about in being at the Munich Security Conference.
Okay.
He says, but when I pointed out Putin's popularity in another meeting, I was immediately chastised. His elections are fake. He's actually very unpopular. That was a quote from the people saying it. And here's JD again. To be fair, there's plenty of fraud in Russian elections, just like in America. But every independent objective effort to measure Putin's popularity has found high levels of support among rank and file Russians. One might even call them the true Russian Volk.
Because he just cares about human life so deeply. He's got to point that out. He doesn't have to throw out there a point about all the people Putin killed, all the children they kidnapped from Ukrainians. No.
It's wild, dude. And we shouldn't gloss over his conversion story where he talks about how it was just so lucrative being anti-Trump. And that's really why he... Did you want to do that or no?
It's so outrageous. I can't dignify it.
It's not like switching over to being pro-Trump has made anybody any money ever.
Yeah, he doesn't. I do want to talk about his attack on a cardinal. I like this also. In the book about his conversion to Catholicism, again, been a Catholic for 2 minutes. In a public spat with the current Pope, Pope Leo. In the book, he wants to make sure to volunteer that he was unsettled by something that was said by Cardinal Pietro Parolin, who was one of the favorites to replace Pope Francis. Ended up going with Pope Leo, still a cardinal. J.D. writes this, I found our conversation unsettling, not because he expressed skepticism of the Trump administration's migration policies, but because of how generic the position was. It's like, I had to get lectured by
keep
this
going.
Cardinal. Okay.
Tim, keep
about
going.
Treating people humanely. What did Cardinal Parolin take issue with exactly? Didn't specify. Did they object to deportations? Just to deportations of certain populations? Were they entirely fine with deportations so long as we didn't say mean things about illegal immigrants?
That. So... He's admitting, well, yeah, we talk shit about these fucking animals all the time, these vermin who are poisoning the blood of the nation. So do they want us to just not do that? Is everything fine so long as we don't say that?
Oh, did we ruffle your feathers? Are we a bunch of snowflakes? Cardinal Parolin, you want me to say nice things about other people now? Is that now that I'm a Catholic?
We're supposed to stop dehumanizing these people?
I didn't realize that was what I was signing up for. That wasn't in the RCIA class that I got the fast track on. Nobody mentioned to me being nice.
That's the craziest fucking line in the entire book, Tim.
He's so fucking awful. Anyway, all right. We're just going to leave it there. There are some other things. How much more can a person take, though? Really? Truly? I have another idea for something for us to do together, JVL. I don't know if we'll be able to pull it off, but it's a little bit more in the Schadenfreude camp. Okay. And so for people who made it to the end of this, just know that I have a treat planned. I have a little dessert. And so hopefully you enjoyed that. Subscribe to the feed. Send it to the J.D. Vance lover in your life. And me and JV, I'll be seeing you soon.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Wendy's new Biggie Deals lets you choose whatever you're in the mood for. It's like a music mixing board of deals, and you're the producer. Go with some chill folk music with a JBC in the $4 Biggie Bite snack. Try the drum and bass of deals with a double stack in the $6 Biggie Bag. Or go full-on sandwich symphony with an $8 Biggie Bundle, the grand finale of snacking. And the best part? They all come with napkins.
$4, $6, and $8 Biggie deals how you want them. At Wendy's.
Price and participation may vary. Single items at regular price. Prices may be higher in Alaska, California, and Hawaii.